and welcome to Revolutionary Woman. My name is Tess Silverman. Women around the world are constantly creating ways to make a difference in their communities, and today's guest is no exception. Naomi Waring started out writing for the theater and was part of the Young Writers Program at the Royal Court, an invite-only group with Stacey Gregg and Alice Birch, with her first play showing at London's BAC. Her first film, Little Ones, an autobiographical documentary, was supported by Film London and the Kevin Spacey Foundation and went to various international festivals. She holds an MA degree from the London Film School, and her graduation film won Best Short Film and screened at top BAFTA and Oscar qualifying festivals. Her work is usually set in working class communities and is influenced by social realism, with a particular interest in youth culture and the female perspective. In 2019, Naomi was selected for Bellatar's directing workshop, where she developed and shot the film Ascend. The film got screened at Locarno Film Festival as part of the anthology Under the God. She was also selected for the Encounters, Widening the Lens, and Go Shorts writing program, as well as mentoring by Raising Films in 2016 at the Edinburgh Film Festival. In 2020, Naomi was commissioned by BBC NI and Screen NI to shoot a short film, Ode, which was screened on BBC Arts, BBC iPlayer, and various international film festivals such as Aesthetica, Dublin Film Festival, Uppsala, and Underwire. She is currently shadowing director Alex Winkler on the HETV series Mary and George. Naomi is currently developing her debut feature film, which was shortlisted for the Torino Script Lab and LIM. Naomi is a visiting lecturer at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama and GSA Teaching Screen Acting on the BA Acting course. Other clients include Hatch Films, The Paperbirds, The Roundhouse, The Lyric Hammersmith, and ISSA. Her films have screened at BBC iPlayer, Dublin Film Festival, Cork International Film Festival, Galway Film Festival, Belfast Film Festival, Manchester International Film Festival, Underwire, Aesthetica, Locarno Film Festival, Kerry International Film Festival, Richard Harris International Film Festival, Shiny Winner, Offline Best International Short, Finalist European Cinematography Awards. Hi, Naomi. Welcome to Revolutionary Women. How are you this afternoon? It is afternoon, right?
It is. Hello, Tess. I'm doing really well, thank you. Really excited and happy to be talking to you today. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by, and I am so excited to have you on my show. Okay, so let's get started. You are originally from Belfast, but your family moved to London when you were 3 years old. What was it like for you growing up in London?
You know what? I always wish that I could see London for the first time. Mm. You know, I can imagine it must be similar to going to New York or something like that. But having grown up here, I feel very much, you know, embedded in it. And I can't really remember my first memories apart from maybe punks on the tube and dirty buses. But I've loved growing up in London because it feels so multicultural and full of stories. It feels like an exceptionally creative place, but also one that's, you know, it's pretty tough living here sometimes because everybody's on the hamster wheel. But I feel very lucky to be in this city at this time. It's been great growing up in London. I live in a little council flat actually that I grew up in. So I live in the home that I had when I was three, and my bedroom is still the same bedroom.
Oh, wow.
And I live with my son now, and
That's awesome.
We don't own it. It's council owned, but it means that I've had affordable rent my whole life, which has really given me the opportunity to follow my dreams and be creative.
Wow.
So I feel lucky, very lucky in that way.
That's amazing. So is it similar to like a rent stabilized kind of thing for apartments? Oh, wow. Well, that's amazing.
It's similar to that. And I always think about it like my beneficiary, like, because somebody who's kind of working class, you know, comes from a fairly like low income family, like making a living in the arts as a woman and a single mum would have been impossible otherwise. So like I'd love to leave one day.
Yeah.
And find a new home.
Right.
But at the minute, I'm, you know, just feeling very grateful to be in central London and with such cheap rent. So,
oh,
yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I've been to London twice now, and I love it. So does my daughter. My daughter's like, me? I was like, it'd be so cool to live here, Mom. I was like, yeah, okay, well, maybe in another lifetime. We'll see. Well,
once I leave my council flat, you guys can come and stay.
Oh, there you go. That's amazing. Oh my gosh. Okay, so you were a child model, and you wanted to be an actress, and with your hard work, you received a scholarship in Sylvia Young Theatre School. How old were you when you started at Sylvia Young Theatre School?
Yeah, so I was a child model from literally a baby. It's really weird. It came about through friends. Like, I think my mum had some, you know, creative friends in the 80s who were doing a music video and they needed a baby,
Okay.
And then I sort of had quite, a lucrative a modelling career as a baby, as a child. And I think that really kind of set me on my path in terms of what I wanted to do. And I always had a very, very strong vision that I wanted to be an actor from a very young age. And applied to go to Sylvia Young. And again, it's quite an expensive school at the time. And we couldn't afford it, but I luckily got a scholarship. And I was there from the ages of 11 to 16.
Oh, wow.
And I was there at the time with Amy Winehouse, the singer. She was she was one of my best friends while we were there together.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, it really instilled in me a lot of hard work. It was very competitive. And I was never a triple threat. I could never really sing or dance. But I could act. So that was the sort of start for things for me in terms of creativity and following my dreams.
Well, was anyone in your family into the creative outlets also? Were they very creative?
My grandma used to be a singer in Northern Ireland, and she would sing in Blackpool and all the bars and things like this. My mum also wanted to be a singer and has a really fantastic voice, but she sort of never was able to follow that dream through, but was always very creative. And then my biological father, he actually lives in New York and he's a photographer.
Oh my goodness. So it runs in the family.
Kind of, yeah, but there's no one who's like in the industry or anything. You know, I think it's all kind of, dreams and things like that. So, yeah, I'm the first actor and in the family.
That's amazing.
To go into the industry.
Wow. Okay, so at 23, you mentioned that you had a son, and it changed the way you felt about the industry. Can you tell me a bit about what changed for you?
Sure. I mean, you know, becoming a mother is obviously like, it's something that people don't talk about in a way of how physically and emotionally transforming it is for a woman. And I think especially like a young woman at 23, you know, I didn't really know who I was. And I sort of suddenly became this other person. I was a mother all of a sudden. And it was actually extremely difficult for me. To go through that sort of transition process. And I really wasn't where I wanted to be as an actor. And I was very ambitious, but I kind of lost a bit of hope in the industry because the roles that were written for women at that time were so few, and none of them were for working class women. And was really sort of unenchanted with it all. And I felt very frustrated that I had all this kind of passion and creativity, but I wasn't able to kind of channel it anywhere.
Right.
And I think once I became a mum, that was kind of amplified for the first couple of years. It was very frustrating for me and I was very confused. But I think as I moved out of that time, I realized how precious time was. And I started to use, when I had very little of my own time, I started to focus it towards thinking about my own projects. And I wanted to write as well. I've been writing. And when my son was 3.5, 4, I moved to Wales and I made with a friend of mine in the middle of winter. We lived in this paddock cottage in the middle of nowhere. I decided to make a small shadow puppet show and we made a film about it. And it was around creativity and motherhood. And all I wanted to do was make one small thing to prove to myself that I could finish something and that I could make something. And so this was my sort of first time of really being courageous to show my own work rather than being part of somebody else's as an actor.
Right.
And it really then started the next chapter of my life. And
yeah, that's amazing, because from that you then went for an MA for filmmaking at a London film school.
Yeah.
And have since been making films for the past 10 years.
Yes.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, I guess it was you've already had that in you, because you've always been creative, right? So
yeah,
this is just a way of channeling it
another
out there.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I again, it was a similar thing. Like, I've never been able to afford to go to these schools, but I always kind of feel like, you know, if you're meant to go, you'll find a way.
Right.
And so, yeah, I started my MA in filmmaking the same day as my son started his first day at school.
Oh, how cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it was a challenge, you know. I really had to juggle, you know, I didn't have really much time for work. So I was, you know, money and picking him up and prioritizing who do I prioritize when? And but it was such a wonderful experience where I was able to immerse myself fully for myself in cinema and films. Mm. And the thing that I came out of it with, apart from a film, was a community and a network. And those are the people that I'm still making films with, who, you know, inspire and work together. And that feels like the most special thing to come out of film source,
awesome.
That community.
That's amazing. Okay, so let's get into it. But just to let you know, I love that you started at the same day that your son went to school. Because it was like, you know, it was a great way also to show him, right, that you have this work for you,
yeah,
right? And it's something for you that he can see. It's like, my mom is working, my mom has a passion, you know. And it's a great way to inspire a young child, you know, because then he sees you as more than a mom, as more than you know, than this person who takes care of me. You know. And it's a wonderful way to let him know, it's like, you can do this as well. And and the people that you're going to be connected with, you'll see, have the same passions and you know, works. So, but that's amazing.
Thank you.
I love that. Okay. And so, all right. So you have a short film now titled Milk. Can you tell me a little about it and what inspired you to make this film?
Absolutely, yeah, thank you. So as you said, I've been making films for 10 years now, but we had the pandemic and we had a couple of the cost of living crisis, and kind of put things on a bit of a back burner. But and because of the cost of living crisis in the UK, things, and I'm sure it's the same in the US as well, you know, families who have maybe been, you know, okay before are now having to use food banks and baby banks, and you know, and their stories and their voices are being buried, you know, not being heard. And I've always been interested in stories that are around, have a social impact. And also about parents. Like, most of my stories are either about father and daughter relationships or about what it means to be a mom. And like you said just a moment ago, it was really important for me to make a story about someone that is more than just a mom, or is more than just a statistic, but is who's creative and, you know, has these ideas in her life as well. And so I came across an article, or maybe I can't actually remember if it was a conversation, about the rising cost of formula in the last 2 years. It's risen 25% above inflation. And it's being put, it's being tagged in shops because it's one of the most stolen items, or it's either put behind the counter with the cigarettes and the alcohol.
Oh, jeez.
I couldn't really believe it. I just kind of, it wasn't something that had crossed my mind when I thought about child food poverty. I really hadn't thought about infant food poverty and about baby And you know, the formula companies in this country are governed by a UNICEF guideline. Mm-hmm. And it means that because of that guideline, you can't actually do any advertising for formula. So it means that the people who are at the top, they have the monopoly of the market and can basically charge whatever they want. And I did a bit of research and I was just really heartbroken at the idea that these mothers were, you know, having to go through humiliating situations in order to feed their children, because most do end up having to steal formula or formula forage, which means they accept, you know, good-willing people who are throwing bits of formula away, and they'll get a bit of formula from here, a bit of formula from there. But it's incredibly dangerous to infants because it's full of bacteria for very quickly, you know, as soon as you open, have to use it. And so I wrote this film and it came out very quickly. It sort of just spilled out of me like milk. And it was very clear, this woman's journey and also her internal world and her thoughts and feelings, and I really wanted it to have an impact and hopefully start a conversation. So I got in touch with a charity called Feed. I happened to come across, there's a newspaper that we get here in London called The Metro, and it's free and it's on the trains. And I was reading it one morning and I saw this campaign called A Formula for Change. And it was being run by the newspaper and this charity Feed. And it was all around the cost of formula and bringing the cost of formula down. And it had 100,000 people who had signed up for it. So I thought, this is a story that needs to be told.
Yeah.
And so I got in touch with the charity because they've been doing the research. They're the people who are connected in terms of government and grassroots organizations. And I sent them the project and they were very excited by it. And it really, they said it really represented everything that they've been working on over the last few years. And that felt really important to me, that I was actually representing something, you know, that was the truth, not just my perceived truth. And we went on this sort of journey together to get the film made and get it out there.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I actually brought up that article and I was shocked to read when you said that, you know, formula was being kept behind the shop counters, tagging them, you know, like in security tags. It's like, oh my God, how are people or parents supposed to provide for their child that way? And I read that some of them had to water down the formula just to make it last. I'm like, good Lord, that's scary. You know, and it's also like, how can you do that to parents? How can you do that to these babies? You know,
I know. And because of the UNICEF guideline as well, it means that baby banks in the UK aren't supposed to provide formula milk. So a lot of them can't provide it because they don't actually get enough sort of money. But a lot of them choose not to because of these UNICEF guidelines. So if it depends what area you're in, some of them do provide it. But if you happen to be in an area where there's a baby bank and they don't provide formula, then you really don't have any other option. And I think there's so much stigma around like breastfeeding or not breastfeeding. And a lot of it's usually other women who are being judgmental against other women because they're not breastfeeding. But, you know, the facts and figures show that if you are in poverty and you are undernourished yourself, the chances of being able to feed are much, much lower, let alone the kind of the pressures and the anxiety that you're probably going through if you're, if you're in that. So it really was about kind of opening up a conversation and also a conversation around how to support women that in that position that do want to breastfeed and can't. So it's really, you know, this isn't like a sort of one way. This is just like a look, this is a societal issue and it's an issue for women around choice as well. And we all know what that means. And so it's really important about to have that conversation and also hopefully change some legislation around the UNICEF guidelines and food vouchers and how we get women you know, and their babies fed.
Right. And like you said, I mean, it all stems back to, it's all connected, right? They're all interconnected. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the mother is undernourished, you know, that's not going to provide the baby the right amount of milk for the baby. And yeah. So what do you do? What do you resort to? It's like, but I was blown away when I found out that there was a woman who stole formula because she had to. She had to feed her baby. And it's like, so my heart went out to that. I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, what would you do? You'd do almost anything to be able to take care of your child.
Exactly.
And so it's conversation that needs to keep going, that needs to, this is a health crisis. It's a crisis. It's not like just a one thing, you know. It's multiple things that affect both mothers and children.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as well in the US, I know that friends of mine have been over there and have been feeding their babies, and they've had to get formula sent over from the UK because I think in one shop someone was saying it was like $50 or something. So, you know, it's not just an issue that's affecting people in the UK. It's definitely happening all over the world.
Right.
And not just one or two cases. You know, that's why it's being tagged, is because I think a lot of people go, I've read online, you know, like in forums, people have, you know, discussions about this kinds of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really misunderstood, because a lot of people think that it's being stolen for the black market. I'm sure some of it's happening because of that. Mm-hmm. But the majority of it are people who actually can't afford it. And there's an assumption around the type of person that can't afford it, which is really untrue as well. I think a lot of the people who are in this position now may not have been in that position a couple of years ago because of the cost of living crisis. And we have nurses here, you know, who are working their butts off for the NHS or in similar teaching roles, and who are just cannot afford the rising cost of rent along with everything else, you know. So it's people who are in, you know, jobs that we look at as like important and necessary to society, who have found themselves in a situation where they no longer can afford to pay the bills. So it's definitely affecting people in a way that it wasn't, you know, beforehand. So I think that that's another myth that I wanted to bust, that it's not just people don't look a certain way if they have to, you know, or it's not a certain type of person. It's really affecting everybody from, you know, all shapes and sizes.
Have you spoken to these women who've been affected by this? How has the response been?
So far, I've spoken to communities, and when we were filming in a particular community in East London, and everybody responded very well. And we had so much of the film, because we had to crowdfund the film, you know, given to us for free because of the work that we're doing. Also given a substantial amount of money by a baby bank who wanted to support the film because they knew how important the film was to be made. The hope is that once the film is made, that we'll be able to go around to, you know, community centres and baby banks and show the film with the community, but also with the people who change and make policy. For me, it's important that people who are going through this see the film, but it's more important to have that happen at the same time with the policymakers, with the people in government, so that a conversation can be had. Because it's they're the ones, you know, that need to see that this is happening. And I think with the charity, with Feed, they said they've got all the facts and figures, but facts and figures really only do so much to a person to make them feel or understand what's happening. Whereas when you see those images, or when you sort of understand through a character's point of view, you're much more likely to empathise and maybe make some change. So the hope is that we'll be doing a screening in November and inviting a mixture of people along to come along to help make change. And then we'll go on a bit of a tour with it. But we will have to try and raise funds for that to happen.
Right.
So I guess we'll see, you know, what the response will be. And also I've tried to make the film as creative and playful as possible. I don't want it to be something that is just very bleak. Mm-hmm. And so there's lots of moments in it where we explore her internal world and how she sees the world. So, mm-hmm. and it does have a positive ending, which is around, you know, looking out for one another, and I think that's something that's really important to me as well. So I hope that it will have a good impact, but yeah. It's very difficult to talk to people who are going through this because of the guilt and shame around it. Mm-hmm. We hope that by sharing the film, people will feel a little less shameful to speak out, and then will have their voices heard. So
I so get that, and I think it's an amazing way to let people know that it's not happening just to them, it's happening to so many other people who may not even want to talk about it. So maybe if they see the film, it's like, oh wow, I'm not the only one, you know, and going, and I think half of the time people are just, like you said, there's shame involved, there's guilt involved, mm-hmm. there's, you know, but it's posed by society because it's like this perception of, well, what do you mean you can't afford it? Why do you need to steal? You know?
So, yeah, exactly.
And it's like, well, no, it's not a matter of that. It's a matter of I can't afford it, you know, and the cost of living is such that I'm not able to provide for my family. And if I can't do that, how am I going to, you know, I can't let my child go hungry. You know, I'd rather go hungry than my child. Right.
Yeah, and that's definitely what happens a lot of the time. Like a lot of, you know, mothers and fathers will sacrifice their own food in order to be able to provide formula or, you know, other things to feed their children. And it's like, you know, it can cost up to, I've seen it in one shop, this is not even an exaggeration, for £22. And I think there are much cheaper versions out there, mm-hmm. but obviously you have to be able to find that supermarket that does them for cheaper, and then some parents believe that the cheaper formula isn't as good as the more expensive formula, so it's really trying to hold you know, the government accountable and also these formula companies mm-hmm. accountable, because they're mm-hmm. really just profiting off of, you know, off of people. I do hope that you know, we'll be able to screen the film in the communities and have lots of conversations around what that means for people and the choice of how you want to feed your child. And without humiliation or shame being involved.
Right. Wow. I'm remembering when my child was a baby and mm-hmm. she could not have regular formula. So, of course, it mm-hmm. had to be this kind of formula where it was the most expensive one. It was like, oh my gosh, how many cans can you buy? Wait a second. You know, like, and we were lucky that, you know, we were able to afford it. But at the same time, it's just like, holy moly. You know, it's like, what can people do if they can't? Like, if your child is allergic to something in the formula, then you have to find a different formula. And you know, and unfortunately, if that's the more expensive one, you figure out a way. As parents, that's what we do. We figure out a way to, like, well, okay, I got to find a way to make sure my child is fed. That's the bottom line. And I know it was a nightmare for us, like, because every formula we tried with her, it wasn't working. So, of course, the most expensive one, when my husband and I were just looking at it, she's like, well, okay, what do we do? You know, we have to. It's a choice that we made, right? But at the same time, I started thinking, it's like, well, what do most people do if they can't do this, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I just think around the whole conversation around, like, in the UK, we have a breast is best policy through the NHS. Which I really, like, I'm 100% behind. I think, you know, if you can breastfeed and you want to breastfeed, fantastic.
Right.
But there is so many women can't and don't want to. They want to share the responsibility of being a parent with their partner. And I think as a society, we're sort of trying to to change things so that there's more equality. But, you know, it kind of has to start with, it starts with these choices, right? It starts with the ability to be able to share the night feeds, or, you know, have mm-hmm. your partner, you know, maybe you want to go back to work and your partner wants to stay home and look after them, or maybe you're not from a heteronormative family and you know, mm-hmm. you're two men raising a child, or I don't know. And so, yeah, I just think these kind of conversations are old and outdated, and they are creating, you know, trauma for people who aren't able to breastfeed, yeah. and they feel like failures. And I just think that's a cruel thing. And another way in which we kind of control women and try to make them feel awful. And it just needs to stop. So there's lots of layers within the film.
Yeah.
I think the main one is around this idea of, you know, what would somebody do in order to feed their child, and what kind of society would make them have to go through those thoughts or those things to do it.
Right. Right.
So, yeah.
This is not a third world country. This is a functioning industrialized country that's having these problems. So yeah. I was like really blown away by that because I had no idea. And also, I mean, to be fair, I have a 25-year-old now, but mm-hmm. I do have friends who have gone through having to yeah. feed their child and having to find formula. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, well, it's great if you can afford it, but if you can't, then what do you
yeah
you know, so that's a really big a big conversation right there.
Well, we've also had just a change of government mm. in the last few months, and so we've been going through under the Conservative government now for 12 years, and really, like, that's what's put us in this place of austerity. And I know this government is very, you know, they've created a new task force called the Child Poverty Task Force. Mm. And there's a lot of campaigning at the minute to get rid of the two child cap benefits, because over here we have a benefit system. But if you have more than two children, you don't get any more money for it. And so there's, you know, there are things that are starting to change slowly. And we do hope that, because of that change in government as well, they'll be a little bit more sympathetic or empathetic to what's happening. And I hope that with this film, it will cement mm-hmm. what they're already hopefully trying to do. So mm-hmm. I know that's, you know, part of the reason that this country is going through that at the minute is because of the Tory government that we've been under for the last 12 years. So mm-hmm. you know, change takes time, but I'm hopeful that, you know, things will improve as a society. And, you know, yeah. I know that we're really lucky to have a welfare system here, but it's really broken and it really hasn't been working. So, let's hope that it's the start of a new era. And mm-hmm. and for the States as well, you know, mm-hmm. it's been a turbulent time in politics, and that really ripples down into communities.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I was, okay, so the term you just used, the two-child policy, okay, mm. I'd never heard of that. And so what happens when you have more than two?
Yeah. So if you're in a low-income family, so my mum, for instance, she was a single mum. She didn't, she looked after us. That was her main thing. She had some part-time jobs, but, you know, never really enough to afford to pay the bills. So she has a thing called your child benefit. Mm-hmm. So each child, you get a certain amount of money per month. And, you know, for all of time, that has included every single child. Mm-hmm. But when Tory government came in, they changed that. So if you are in a, you know, a low income family who are, you know, in on the poverty line, and mm-hmm. you have three children or four children, you only get a benefit for two of them. And the rest of those children are not supported by the government. Gosh. And under government rule, because obviously, you know, the Tories and a lot of people believe that you shouldn't be having children if you can't afford them.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And, you know, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of conversation around that and what that kind of means. And so you know, it's so it's such a complex system, because also we also have some of the highest childcare in the world. Mm-hmm. So as in, you have to pay the most amount of money for childcare here than you do anywhere in the world. Wow. And so, you know, when they're talking about people going back to work and mm-hmm. you shouldn't have children, then you can afford, but there's no systems in place to really support that work. So,
yeah.
You know, the woman in my film or the women in the real world who are stealing formula are, you know, they might have jobs. They mm-hmm. just can't actually afford to go and do them because the cost of childcare is so high, and there's a benefit cap where you can only have two children in benefits. So
I'm shaking my head because I'm like, what? Why? Yeah. I mean, I don't understand the two child thing. And I get it. It's a different country. It's a yeah. different. But like, yeah. what are you supposed to do if you have four or three? How do you put a cap on uh-huh. how many children should get benefits? It's a child.
It's crazy. And the thing is as well, like the people who are sort of, you know, who have lots and lots of money uh-huh. and they look uh-huh. down on people who are uh-huh. using welfare uh-huh. or have benefits, they yeah. don't really recognize that the benefits they are given by mm-hmm. the government mm-hmm. in terms of tax cuts, in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, like whatever else that the government has given for those people who can afford things, they don't, because we don't phrase it as a benefit. We call it a tax claim, or whether, you know, we might call it a stamp duty. You know, you get extra money off your stamp duty or whatever. These are benefits that are benefiting people who have money. Mm. Nobody's looking down on those. Nobody's kind of saying, oh, this needs to be stopped, this needs to be changed. But yeah. the poorest in society who can't afford, you know, it's our fault, it's their fault, or whatever. So systemically, there's just because of the way that the government has been over the last 12 years, there's a real, you know, a real way of seeing people who are needing welfare and needing to be supported by the state. And you know, at the end of the day, that's where we pay our taxes. Mm-hmm. So hopefully things will change, but we have been in a sad set of disarray for a long time. And, wow. you know, I know trying to make a film to change something is a very lofty idea, but it's the only tool that I had to be able to hopefully make some change or have some conversation mm-hmm. around, you know, what's happening in society to women and children. So that was my sort of contribution. But I do know that change takes time, and I just hope it will make some small change.
Oh, I think so. Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, I haven't even seen your film, but I mean, from what I've read and from what you've described, it's a necessary conversation, and because it affects the whole community. It does. Yeah. It's not just one person; it's a whole community. Yeah. And what I love is that you are using it as a platform to hopefully create change. You yeah. know, change needs to be done mm-hmm. because how much longer can you keep this up? You know.
No, exactly.
And it's not sustainable this way. And these poor families who are having to make
those decisions.
Yes.
And yeah.
Yes. And having yeah. that as like basically their only way to provide.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, it's heartbreaking. Crazy. Yeah. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't even fathom, you know, mm-hmm. like how a government can do that to their people, but I get mm. it. It happens, mm. you know.
Yeah.
But hopefully, with this film and other conversations,
yes,
you know, it'll affect the way you know this policy will hopefully change, and it'll affect the way community sees these families who are basically trying to provide for their family.
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
It's not because of they're trying to sell it off somewhere, but it's a way to really just make sure their child stays alive.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I hope. I do hope that we shot the film 2 weeks ago now, and it was honestly such a special few days with a bunch of wonderful people who were very committed and passionate about the project, and I just felt very lucky to lead that ship. And just going into the edit, I've actually not seen any of the rushes yet. I've only been speaking to my editor very briefly, but I'm expecting a a very rough assembly soon, so we can begin this next part of the process and kind of shaping and creating something that we hope will have lots of impact. So I'm really excited about this next part.
That's great. I'm so excited for you, and I can't wait to like find out when and where it will be shown, you know, because I would love to be able to see it and share it on you know, my feed. So who do you think, who would you credit for where you are now?
My younger self.
That's awesome.
My younger self. My younger self, and also I really have a fantastic friend who's been a mentor to me, who I call my Gandalf.
I love it.
she was a teacher of mine at drama school, and we became friends and collaborators once I left. And she gave me my first, roles as in film and teaching, and you know, her methodology in terms of working with actors has always influenced and inspired me. Her name's Amanda Brennan. She has an amazing book out called The Energetic Performer. She's been a big supporter of mine, and I guess I don't think I would be here without her. And then also my younger self for having the courage to keep going in the face of so much adversity and rejection. It's a really tough industry, and I've been in it my whole life. And I've always been very passionate and ambitious, but I did have to go through a lot of hurt. So I'm very grateful to my younger self for kind of keeping going and having that kind of openness and creative spirit. So, yeah.
That's amazing. I love it. Okay, so Naomi, what's next for you?
What is next for me? Once we finish the film and spend some time getting it out there, that's really important to me. And then I've got a couple of feature films that I am hoping to develop and work
on. That's amazing.
I have supported. So really it's about going into longer format for me. I've been trying to break that glass ceiling for many years now. I'd love to be able to be working on more stories and films and hopefully one day being paid for it, Tess.
Yeah, that is important.
That would be really important to me. That's I think at the minute it's always I've got to finish the film, but I also do have to be thinking about kind of what next So just developing those and hoping to get this film a platform and to really make it.
I can't wait to see where it lands. You know. So if anyone wanted to know more about you and your film Milk, how would they go about it?
Good question. So I have a website, naomiwaringfilms.com, and actually just literally as you said that, I thought I should probably update it and put some stuff up. But I also have an Instagram account and an Instagram for the film. So my handle is Naomi_Waring, and the film's Instagram is Milk_Short Film. We have lots of updates and things on there. So please come along and say hello. or go to my website.
Yeah. Okay. And is there anything you'd like to say to my listeners?
Oh gosh. I guess one of the points of the film at the end is just around this idea that kindness is an option, to look outside of ourselves and see in our communities who might be struggling. I think there was sort of two things that happened in the times of COVID-19. And it was people felt very isolated, but there was also this other sort of thing that was happening in my community anyway. And I know in lots of communities in London where really people were looking out for the ones who were hit the hardest. And there was a real generosity. And I think it's about trying to remember that kindness is an option and being generous and looking outside of yourself in order to, support each other and kind of have that connection and not forget about that and ask for help as well. I think asking for help is really important, and it's something that a lot of people feel very humiliated to do. So those are a couple of things.
I love that kindness as an option, and people forget, you know, like, and it's easy, you know, it's really just like, it's a helping hand, right? It's just like making sure that your neighbors are taken care of besides your family. Because who knows what their position, that what position they're in now, and you know, how can you make that easier for them, right?
Yeah, because it comes around, you know. Like I feel so lucky. I'm always, you know, this word manifest is sort of being thrown around lots nowadays, but I do very much feel like you give what you get back, and you know, if you're generous to somebody else, it does come back. And I think it's about not feeling isolated and not feeling like you're on your own, and feeling that connection. And I think as a society, and you know, we just need to
remember that. Yeah, I love that, because it's true for me, you know, like within my own community, there is, you know, I try to stay connected to my neighbors and even my family back in New York. And it can be hard, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, if you at least make an attempt, right?
Yeah.
And just say, hey, how are you? You know?
Yeah.
And most people, that's all they need. They just want to make sure that they're heard.
Yes.
So that's,
and seen.
Yeah, yeah, and seen, exactly. So I love that. I love what you just said. So if you had one thing to change that you wish you had done years ago, what would it be? Would there be anything?
To change. I wish I had been less afraid of getting it right, like getting it wrong. I was very much have been, you know, an idea of in the industry and perfection and reaching a kind of sort of standard and wanting to get it really right before I put anything out in the world. But it was so much of more than that. It was more of a fear about being seen. And I wish I had been able to be courageous earlier in terms of just giving things a go, just trying things out, and knowing that that's how you learn, and not being afraid to be seen, to be vulnerable, or to want. I think you know, there's a real, to kind of say, this is what I want. I think with this film, for instance, because I had to crowdfund it, I had to let my family and community know that this is what I want to do. This is important to me. And there's something really scary about doing that, because if it fails, you really feel like you're failing on a stage. But I wish I had been a little bit more trusting in myself and my community to just give it a go. So that's one thing I would have tried a little bit earlier.
And my last question is, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
I don't know. Probably something similar to what I just said, just sort of like, you know, trust in yourself. Like, be connected to that deep trust, and trust your relationship to your visions and to your creativity, because it's worth something, you know, to you and other people, and not look so much to external sources for validation, but just trust in that. And because it's, you know, I've just turned 40 this year, and it really feels like the first time in a long time. I think there's a sort of trust you have in your early days, which is like this naivety, and then you kind of go out in the world and you kind of get burnt, and then you forget that. And so I really feel like I'm just coming back to that again, so just reminding myself of that is important.
I love it. Thank you. Okay, Naomi, thank you so much for stopping by and, you know, talking to me about your life and your film. And
thank
I
you.
Wish you so much luck. And I really hope that it sparks the conversations that's needed to get, you know, the message across that this is important. This is life changing for so many people. And I just, you know, I wish you so much.
Thank you.
And
thank you for reaching out and being part of the community now and giving me a platform to share my voice and ideas, and thank you for doing that, you know, in terms of the work that you're doing and having interesting conversations with women and holding up women in the community is really a special thing that you're doing. So thank you so much.
Thank you for saying yes and for being a part of my show, because you know I really, like, I was floored when I found out what your film was about. I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, it's like, why is no one talking about this? I didn't know anything about this. And to know that, you know, it's affecting so many, not just women, but families, you know, it has to be heard. And I can't wait to see where it lands and how it's received, because it needs so much exposure out there, you know, because this is not just happening in your community. I'm sure it's happening everywhere, but it's not being talked about. Right.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But I wish you so much luck, and I can't wait to talk more about this in another time. So
great.
Well, with have a great day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
That's our show for today. I've posted more information about Naomi Waring on RevWoman.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in every other Thursday for another episode of Revolutionary Woman. You can listen to Revolutionary Woman on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Just a little note, I've launched a Patreon account to support the show. All proceeds will go to producing and editing the episodes to give my poor husband a break for being my personal IT and production department. He wrote this. The address is patreon.com/revwoman.